SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Thursday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone, Sirius XM online, and at our website too, stevebick.com. And after a sale event yesterday that I'm going to guess a lot of you saw the headlines, the sale was earlier in the day than typically. They started at 2 o'clock, which actually I think benefited a lot of attendees who then were able to catch flights in the early evening. If you haven't seen the headlines, if you haven't seen, I've been trying to post a video, but won't seem to, it's kind of long. It's 8 minutes. And that's how long it took for one of the most exciting bidding wars that you're going to see at a horse sale. And I've told the story before. John Parada, going back to Green Monkey days at Calder, the sale, the winter sale back then, and we were a 4 o'clock show then. We were 4 to 7, and I hung around the sale for quite a while, and then had to head to the studio, which at that time was on 17th Street Causeway. It must have been about, 4:45 that John called with breaking news. And I'm thinking, oh, breaking news. What? $16 million. that number continues to be discussed and argued, the Green Monkey. What transpired with that Curlin Colt, hip 173, co-bred by John Secura, Hill and Dale, and Vinnie Viola, St. Elias, was unbelievable. And you recall that, in fact, what Rich Migliori, just when I asked him the other day, who do you like so far? And he said, this Curlin Colt, late in the sale, hip 173. And then when you were on the grounds yesterday, everybody kind of knew that he was going to be the sale topper. But even before that transpired, there were, these moments of, major tickets. And, that included a $1.5 million Larry Best purchase, an Into Mischief filly. He wanted a filly. He didn't necessarily, he was quoted as saying he didn't necessarily have to have, same as Instagram. And he said that had nothing to do with it. He just liked the individual. And then literally two hips later, a $1.65 million American Pharaoh goes to Coolmore, becomes the session. It's not even a session, it's a sale, because one day there had been $1 million Into Mischief earlier. The first seven-figure hip was within the first, 20 minutes, and that was also Coolmore, who had a mammoth day, because of course they partnered on the purchase of the Curlin Colt that fetched $3,650,000. And there was speculation, and John Secura is going to join us after the first break. There was speculation that the horse, and particularly when you had the $1.5 million seller and the 1.3 and the other, there were what, three 1.5 types, it became apparent that this horse was going to probably get close to 2 million and maybe hit 2 million. And we'll see what John, what he had in mind going into this, but it blew past 2 million like a freight train by a hobo. and just kept ping-ponging, just back and forth. And Jamie McCalmont and Donato Lanny were apparent. The bidder on the phone that Boyd Browning was handling was not apparent. And there was speculation that it was Stone Street. Barbara Banky was there earlier with her team, and I did see Barbara leave her seat at one point, but I don't know if they had to leave or, and if it was, there hasn't been a distinct answer about the underbidder and who was sparring, but it raced up to right through $3 million. And then, I mean, with each $50,000 increment, including actually a bid, there was a bid, I think, when it was $2,850,000 to get it to $3 million in an attempt, I think, to basically, you know, push out the other, you know, the other foe, the other bidder. It was unbelievable, and it took just a little under 10 minutes. And it wasn't just the 10 flat that this Curlin colt motored in the Breeze Show, and it wasn't the way he showed and everything else. Physically, he's just stunning. I actually went right in front of the dais and was taking the video. He did not blink. Just stood there, took it all in, was looking at the audience. There's the barkers, there's the, you know, the bid spotters are they're screeching. And he didn't blink. And I can tell you that there were 30 other two-year-olds up to that point that were carrying on with in the ring and bucking and yanking on the chain and carrying on. In one point, there was one that almost went over and banged against the the side of the platform. This horse was so composed, the proverbial look of the eagle, and my favorite is when they're standing facing one direction, and then they turn their neck and head in the other direction and basically pose. This is clearly, I mean, I don't know how he necessarily makes back $3,650,000. Probably not going to be very tough to do that on the racetrack, but of course he's got, when you talk about a stallion's pedigree, this is more than the usual, nice page stallion pedigree. He is from the family of Better Than Honor. And that only includes, you know, Rags to Riches and Jazzle and Casino Drive and Man of Iron and so on and so forth. And then her daughter, Teaming, who got Streaming, Treasuring, etc., and the granddaughter, the dam of this colt, Achieving. So we'll let John, I don't want to oversell I don't think it was possible to oversell this colt. There was a really, it was a wonderfully pleasant day at the sale, and despite external pressures and difficulties around the industry, the mood was very upbeat, and you know, the chance to see people from different parts of the country, including West Coasters, in a big way, Kaleem Shah with Ben McElroy and Simon Callahan and the Hartoonian team, the Rockingham Ranch, they bought that. It's funny, they bought that one of the two big breezers, right? The Sky Kingdom. They bought the Sky Kingdom, I think, $875. The Kieran Dunn Pinhook was $115,000 as a Phasic July yearling last year. $115,000 turned into $875,000. There were some really notable, I don't want to get to the Pinhook successes, including Randy Bradshaw at the end of the sale, which everybody applauded, and everybody very happy for Randy Bradshaw. And Bradshaw picked out a Keeneland September yearling a blame colt for $65,000 that then turned around and sold for $700,000. So a big score, a 11 times sale price. Carlo Vacareza with his pinhooking consignment. You may have seen the article that did Marty write it? I think Marty McGee wrote it. And Carlo mentioned it to me the other night at the PDJF fundraiser. Carlo's going to stop training officially. And he's got a variety of other business interests, including the restaurant. And there may be big news on the Frank and Dino's front. People that would like to have real Italian food in the bluegrass, you may be in for a treat. Let's just put the long rumored Frank and Dino's may very well be coming to Kentucky. But Carlo had a good with some of his high profile pinhooks. So I want to do the pinhook because there's a lot of interesting results. Carlo's first one was hip 60. He paid $235 for an American Pharoah at the Saratoga sale, which now looks like a bargain because it fetched $775,000. So that he had a couple other. Yeah, I think he had two later that RNA'd, and then I think he had one other okay return. That one helps. There was Bobby Dodd had the Medaglia d'Oro colt, hip 175, that went for $1.2 million off of a $300,000 Keeneland September purchase. Yeah, so there was some good. There was a lot of scratches, and that's got to be addressed at some point, but there's still plenty of 2-year-old sale opportunity left. I mean, there's. Back to OBS in April. Then there's Demonium in May and OBS in June. And Keeneland's got the return of theirs. So some people, you know, based on how many scopes, how many visitors you had and all that kind of stuff. And some people said, you know what, we'll save it for another day. Healthy scratches, basically. Not horses that didn't. You know, that didn't come out of their breeze right, that kind of thing. But overall, the numbers, it's funny because through the early part of the sale, and maybe that was part of the scratches and the outs, the first, I don't know, hour and a half, but then the next couple of hours, it really started to pop. So and I'm, as much fun as the atmosphere is and you know, the mix of people, I thought, the people that I talked to about, you know, the news of the day, as it were, was positive and hopeful. That in spite of another hit piece yesterday by Gannett. And this gets back to that storyline that we tried to bring up. That there's no benefit. The industry, you can't win trying to merchandise and market incident reports and statistics, because no matter how much internally the industry recognizes there's, you know, there's progress and you know, there's, you know, victories in small increments. From a day-to-day basis, it's next to impossible to tell a good story. And I'll tell you one thing. I saw a quote that animal rights activists talking about entertainment like this is a circus or an aquatic show. This isn't a circus. This isn't an aquatic show. It's an enormous industry. We're not doing this for the entertainment. It's a lifestyle and a business, and it's enormous. And these people that don't seem to understand that there's millions of jobs, careers, and lives involved. I don't get it. It's stunning what that these people think that this is, you know, this is some sort of, you know, this is like cockfighting. I mean, just stunningly myopic about what this business is. Very strange. John Secura starts it off. Big Thursday at the races.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Tickets to the Belmont Stakes Racing Festival are on sale now. New York's premier three-day racing festival returns to historic Belmont Park June 6th through 8th. Buy tickets today and enjoy trackside reserve seats or enhance your experience with one of our premium hospitality packages to make this an unforgettable event. Grandstand admission starts at $15 and three-day festival passes are also available. Buy now at Ticketmaster.com or visit BelmontStakes.com. The Belmont Stakes, where champions are crowned.
Amazing achievements for Pennsylvania breads on the world stage. Thanks to Finest City, Unique Bella, and Shamrock Rose, PA joins Kentucky as the only state in the past decade to breed Eclipse Award champions three straight years. Add that to our unmatched incentives. Plus, our racehorse development fund can only be used to support PA breeding and racing. Why breed anywhere else? This is Brian Sanfratello. Go to PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
To At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
We're back at the races. Coming up on 20 into hour one on this Thursday. A lot to do. Of course, the draw yesterday at Gulfstream for the Florida Derby Day card. And we'll get to that. The big Saturday card with two grade ones making updates at Santa Anita and, of course, Dubai and so on and so forth. We'll do it all as the morning unfolds. But before John Secura heads back to Kentucky, wanted to get him on and congratulate him on yesterday's outlandish result with the co-bred Hillendale, St. Elias, Vinny Viola, Curlin Colt. John, congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. It was a rewarding day yesterday.
John, it was electric in there, and pretty much everybody, as the afternoon was unfolding, the anticipation was that HIP 173 would be the sail topper, but I don't think even you and the Coolmore people and Vinny Viola and everybody else expected that.
Yeah, it was a really breakout moment, and something happened in that sale, sort of transcended contemporary times. It was almost a throwback. It just felt so electric, and you just sensed that the parties involved were not going to quit, and I thought it was a very bold move that I think they're bidding somewhere on $3.3 million, and they jumped to $3.5 million, and
yes,
at that point it was sort of a gasping moment, and I think it's let the other side know that we're not going to be deterred, and we're going to own the horse, and the Coolmore team are the bravest guys in the business, and they know what they like, and when they get stuck into wanting to buy one, they're very formidable, and if they don't bid based on what's the value of the horse, they bid on passion and the desire to own the horse, and their objective is to come with the horse, and they did, and they do that so often, and seldom do they ever quit when they're determined. So it was fun to watch. It was fun to be a recipient, but it was also to see that steely will of both sides. It was Stone Street on one side and Puma on the other. And talked about titans of the business and how bold Barbara Vankey was in supporting her stallion, and John Moynihan and her team. They did a fantastic job, and Coolmore are not who they are by accident. They have two things that are very difficult to beat. One, they have access to unlimited funds, but more importantly, they're completely courageous, and that separates them from most people, and that they don't quit. So we were thrilled with the result, but more importantly, he's a top horse, because it's always the second component of selling a horse well, that you wish the buyer of the horse to have great value and have great success when they buy an expensive horse. So thrilled for everybody.
John, there were a couple of different elements that made this possible, and even before we talk about J.J. Krupe and his preparations with the horse, and then the Donato Lanny and the Coolmore team coming together, to work together in partnership to buy him. But you and Vinny Viola, this was made possible because you didn't present this colt as a yearling.
Yeah, really, it went back even further. That the family of Better Than Anna and teaming and all of her daughters, one that was, cultivated over more than 20 years, and it's a family I hold dear, and you always hope to proliferate families and have things go well, but, the mayor and the daughters, they've all cooperated, and, there's been more black type, every year in a great existing family, and I did some business with Vinny, and I told him that if an opportunity ever presented itself to get involved in any of these daughters, you'd be the only person I called, and I called him, and he was very brave. He bought a very expensive mare, and I'm thrilled that he was rewarded for, again, sort of the mirror image of that the two-year-old selling. He was courageous. He didn't blink. He didn't negotiate the price. He realized it was an opportunity to buy something special, and he said, "I'm in." And this is the first foal sold out of the mare, the first result in foal since the partnership. The mare's back in foal, two curlings, so we never count that till foals are born, because foaling season's not automatic. But that's something we're really looking forward to. Foal was born and raised at Hillendale. We always liked the horse. We brought him to September sale, and he was popular, but he wasn't, he wasn't a breakout popular horse. He was a bit round. He was a little soft in his pasterns, and you could just, you could tell that he was a developing, moving forward horse, and that, 60 days, 90 days, months from now, that he would keep planning forward, and the decision was made not to bring him to the ring and to withdraw him and take him home. And again, credit to Vinny. He asked me, "What do you think is going to happen?" I told him what I think is going to happen. He goes, "Well, why wouldn't we just take him home and wait for his best day?" And I said, "Vinny, I have no problem with that. I think it's the right decision. Just make sure you're fine with it, because, this is the first foal of the mare, and maybe you want to sell this foal. Now let's just do that." And, didn't gripe, didn't complain, and the kind of positive person that he is and the achiever he is. After that was done, he was on looking forward to the next step, not worrying about an opportunity missed that day. And then what can you say about J.J. Kruppi? I mean, I had nothing to do with the development of the horse. The horse was delivered to him as a yearling, and he lengthened. He was beautiful, and he was a bit round and a bit heavy when he was a yearling, and he leaned out. And you know, credit to the horse, too, because you can't make the horse taller or longer. That's the developmental process. But, you know, the horse worked great, trained great, and all credit goes to, you know, J.J. Kruppi, Monique, and his staff. And I'm not trying to claim any credit or involvement in any of the horse's training and presentation and sale. That was all Kruppi, and I was a spectator yesterday, and I'm glad that Vinny had the result, and his wife and family were there, and it's very rewarding. It's a business of relationships, and I've been lucky enough to have a great relationship with a wonderful lady and Barbara Banky, and you know, when this is one of the first mares went to Curlin. It was the first crop, and when you know my promise to her when the horse moved to Hillendale, you'd get all my best mares. And you know, when we raised the horse to $100,000, that was considered a significant boost in his stud fee at Baby Beyond, where the horse had yet landed. It was somewhat hopeful, but we always considered Curlin a great sire, and that, you know, we bid to buy our interest like he was a great sire. We supported him with our best mares like he's a great sire, and he's certainly become that. So it's rewarding for her and my relationship with her that we can be contributory to the success of Curlin, and we've done lots of stallion business since, and we're very excited about, you know, the Champion Good Magic coming to the farm, and then the first significant deal I did with Vinny Viola for him to be rewarded and have a huge return. Everyone's reputation in business is usually well earned, and if you try to do significant things with significant people and it works out, you have a growing business and firm relationships that are mutually beneficial. So can't think of a more important lady to me than Barbara Banky, and then what a budding and great new relationship with Vinny Viola. He's just he's a man of drive and intellect that's he's different than me. he's got 19 cylinders in his engine, and I have three. And I've got to tell him to slow down and talking and thinking so I can try to keep up. So at least there's one subject I'm somewhat versed in, and I can give my opinion about horses. Everything else, I'm all ears, because I want to learn from sort of a supernatural person, and that's the kind of guy he is. And, rewarding to be around, people and titans of business like Barbara and Vinny, and that's one of the great things about the horse business. You have so many unique people and so many driven people, and we have a commonality of passion, and that's the horse and the sport, and when it mixes with commerce, and everybody has a chance to enjoy and thrive. It's very rewarding. It's kind of a lonely game. If the success is all yours, it's nice to share with people that are deserving, and then within yourself to know that you're working hard to improve the not only value of the assets, but to try to achieve things together, and where you're doing your part as well.
Well, and that in fact the relationship with Vinny Viola that predates the start of the stallion career, as you talk about having put him and offered him a part of the dam of achieving the dam of this colt, and of course subsequently Army Mule lands at Hillendale.
Yeah, Army Mule is a horse that I followed. He was a real buzz talking horse, and I talked to Vinny, and you know, it was a very straightforward deal. And you know, he loves the horse, and we thought Mares could support him. They're supporting him. I'm supporting him right now. His book is at 125 Mares, so he's been a very popular horse. And I just said to Vinny, the critique on the horse is going to be he had a limited career, and he's by Frisian Fire. And I said, let's hope the critique is as accurate as it was with Candy Ride, where he came from Argentina. He had a limited career. He was by Ride the Rails. Who is that? So I hope both critiques are equal, because you know this horse was a superstar of a racehorse. He's beautiful to look at. You know, Frisian Fires by APND. His dam's a champion in Australia. We have, you know, our native and crafty prospector, and a significant name in the pedigree. And you know, you never know if a horse will make it or not. But his athleticism, his talent, you know, the test of the sires whether they pass their talent onto their progeny. And if that happens, what will the result be? Well, if our mule will pass his talent on to his offspring, they'll be very good and very fast. And, you know, I try not to be outrageous in any predictions. All I'm going to say is that we believe we're supporting the horse with Mares, and we're excited about the first foals. And after that, it'll be up to the horse to, you know, for those progeny to perform. But, you know, first time he runs in a stake, I think he was the fifth off the track record at, you know, our taxes record was 30-some-odd years old. And, you know, he won his first three starts, but 23, 24 lengths. And pretty hard to be, you know, on track record timing at Aqueduct, the first time he ran in a stake and win a grade one wrapped up. So he certainly was a wonderful racehorse, beautiful to look at, definitely has enough pedigree, and we're excited to see the first foal. It's very fertile, getting his bars in foal, and so it's hopefully it'll be a furtherance of our relationship, and successful sire is, you know, what we're all hoping for in the business. And you know, you try to follow your instincts and get involved with the horses that you think have a big chance, and after that, it's an exciting time, and it'll be a wait and see. It's very, very competitive game, hard to get the horses you want. You know, there's multiple eyes on the same horse, and it's much like, you know, the yearling sale or the two-year-old sale, that people identify a particular horse, and you know, six farms want to buy the same horse. And I'm sure Vinny could have got more money and could have held out and could have negotiated, you know, four against one and see how it turned out. But he's a gentleman. He gave me his word. And, you know, that's better than any contract when a gentleman gives you his word. So I value the relationship, and I feel very lucky to be around him and to learn from him about life, not just doing horse business with him.
John Sikora is with us from Hill and Dale, and yesterday the absolute stunning result, $3,650,000 for the Curlin colt from Better Than Honors family. And one thing about him, and I videotaped almost the whole thing, John, and it was remarkable to me with the bid spotters hooting and hollering. You know, not that the bidding needed to be exhorted, but he was as composed and as unperturbed by the surroundings, just taking it all in. And it appears that he's got a mind to match the physical, and it seems like the sky's the limit. And of course, later after the sale was over, 45 minutes later, some revelry at the bar with Bob Baffert and everybody in attendance. It was a pretty buoyant atmosphere.
It was great. I was going to have a drink, but I needed grapefruit juice, and they didn't have it. So I stood back and watched the celebration. So it was everybody was excited, and I think Coomer put some team together after the fact, before the fact, I don't know. I wasn't involved in any of that, and so they had a group that will hopefully share in a very good horse, and I feel for John Moynihan. I know he loved the horse, and that they were he was bold and determined, and it meant a lot to me that he thought this was a special horse, because you know John is a world class horseman. His emotions are always a check, and seldom does he just have that overwhelming, I have to own this horse look, and he had that, and it was, you know, it was organic, it came generated from him, you know, nobody pushed on him, those were his thoughts, so it meant a lot to me to validate what everybody thought, and, you know, by the fact that he thought this was a really special horse, so that meant a lot, and it's great for curling. You know, we have a very competitive market at the top. You know, when you're asking somebody to breed your stallion that stands for $175,000, there's a lot of reasons that you have to explain. You know, you have to have not only racetrack success, you have to be able to point out Group 1 winners and classic horses that the horse produces. And then you have to say that if you go to sales ring, that you can have a breakout, fantastic result. So, you know, this kind of thing really, really validates the horse and is more important than one could imagine. Not just to sell one yearling, but it sort of sends ripples through the business, knowing that, you know, if you get a great colt, who's well-bred and does everything right by curling, that there's no limitation. And when you see a Coolmore team by a curling, you know, if there's a team smarter, well-organized, more successful than them, I don't know who it is. And not that, you know, we'd do anything for asking that, gee, well, if another team says it's okay, it must be good. That's not, you know, our approach. But, again, I think it's a complete validation that, that you know, the way they buy war fronts now is the way they bought a curling. And that sort of tells everybody the horse has arrived. We believe that he's arrived, but this is great that you have a international participation like this on a curling colt.
Now they also bought that filly. They partnered with Kaleem Shah, Ben McElroy, the $1.3 million filly, Hip 119. And John, I also want to get your reaction to Byron getting this kind of a spotlight and a couple of big sales as his first crop go through the 2-year-old cycle. And I saw Cantheros had one in too that sold well.
Yeah, it was a very good result for our sires, and again, much like you know, with Barbara Banky, Kaleem Shah, his mares are at the farm. We've known him a long time. I buy Byron from him, and to see the success of Byron's in the sales ring is rewarding in full circle, and you know, it humbles me that you know that we have relationships with these people, and you know, and as you continue in the business and one decade becomes another, and you start limping, and you see some gray hairs. You wonder, gee, what's the future of the business? And I think the future is having those relationships with people. And you know, it's very hard to find people that are loyal, people whose, you know, word is their bond, and very loyal. I try to be that way in the way I do business, and then to have, you know. You know, Kaleem's been a long time, and these people have been here in a mix with some of the new clients. It's rewarding to us, and you know, credit to our team and, you know, Donato and his relationships with people and support of the farm. And, you know, Bob Baffert is always, you know, endorsing and helpful. And, you know, Mike Pegram and, you know, mayors on the farm that we've had for a long time. So it's so there's a lot of bad things that happen in the business as far as misfortune and things go wrong. I, you know, was elated yesterday that I got a voicemail that, you know, we have a very important horse, and she had a dead foal last night at the clinic. So, you know, it's a mix of business, and you know, you need these rewards to make up for a lot of bad things that happen, and so my approach is now, I wish them great luck, turn the page, and now it's our business to have, you know, live great foals that thrive and do well, and so we can do this again. Eddie Wood joked that after this, he said, "You'll never sell another yearling again." I said, no. I realize how lucky there's. You know, I don't get swept up into something that
don't change your approach.
Happen this
yeah.
way.
So, yeah.
I'll leave this to the professionals. Those guys are brilliant at what they do, and I know I was over my head and out of my element there, so I kept my distance. I'll leave it to the pros to buy and sell and train 2-year-olds. That's not my thing, and I'm too old to learn that stuff.
John, you know, you reference one thing too that I before we go, I do want to ask. I mean, obviously, overall, and you know, with two of these sales now in the books, OBS March and this boutique kind of sale, and then we'll go back to OBS and Keeneland and Timonium, etc. The segmentation of the industry and the overall, I thought, the overall atmosphere, having talked to a lot of people from different parts of the country and different parts of the business yesterday, people were, from my vantage point, pretty upbeat under what is now an unwelcome spotlight and critique. What's your feeling on how, as an industry, we best answer our critics?
Well, I don't think there's enough time to, you know, delve into all the conversations and the reactions. The continued support of the sale, I think, means that we have a business that's resilient. We have people that love the business and love the horse. I don't think the public perception of our business is accurate whatsoever. But to a degree, it's our own fault because we don't have an organized or formal response team to any time we would have crisis. We don't have anyone formally involved with promoting our image and, you know, who we are. And every business has, for lack of a better word, sort of a publicist or, you know, a reactionary media group that in any story about their business, be the NFL, be the, doesn't matter the league or the subject, there's an immediate response and, you know, it clarifies it. Say any points of contention. It talks about the commitment that, you know, like, for example, the NFL, you know, their reaction to, you know, the concussion issue, to charity, to so many things where, you know, you can have a negative stereotype of a business, and if you point it out, if it's pointed out to you, the positives, then, you know, you get sort of a back and forth rather than just one side. And I'm not in the media business, you are, but if you look at any issue between the Facebook and Twitter and all the media forms, it doesn't take an organized big budget to really be an influencer or you know, get something out in public opinion. And, you know, if a group that doesn't like horse racing has 50 people that are, you know, attacking the business, all of a sudden thousands of people are aware. And if you hear one side of any story, you know,
Absolutely.
Go to any courtroom,
yep.
and when you hear one side, you hear guilty, then when you get the explanation from the defendant, you say not guilty. So, you know, you society is very superficial. They do a quick glance and form an opinion, and the quick glance and the headlines are negative, then I think it's hard for our business to. So in my opinion, there's no question there needs to be a very well-funded, organized campaign to advocate for our business, not only in response to you know, negative periodic stories, but to help try to grow our business, to grow fans, to grow attendance, therefore to grow, you know, the gambling dollars and make the business vibrant and relevant again. You know, we're really participating in such a small part of the sports and entertainment business, and it should be way more than it is now. And if anyone doubts if that's possible, you just have to look back and, you know, 10 and 20 and 30 years ago, I remember reading those statistics where, you know, more people went to horse races than attended any other sporting events. And now, you know, we're sparsely attended and people are betting on the simulcast and, you know, the live event, the excitement of that, and, you know, seeing the glory of the horse and, you know, amongst other passionate fans, those things are very contagious and people enjoy that. And we have to take those events of the Derby and try to go from, you know, one great day to five to next thing you know, to having, you know, sort of every weekend have an exciting looking forward to event like we do in Florida this weekend, like we do in Dubai, and the Keeneland meet just coming up. And really have to reach out to society that is either disconnected to, disinterested, mm-hmm. or never been exposed to the business, because I think everybody that's in the horse business at some point, myself included, went to the races with their grandfather and were around the horses. And, you know, everyone was interested to some degree. Now, you'd ask people horse racing, they know nothing about it. So society changes, and, you know, we want to be continually relevant, not in very small, passionate pockets, but, you know, racing should be thriving in a state like Chicago. It's a world-class city, and, sure. you know, state like Illinois, city like Chicago. You know, we have too many of these forefront states and locations where we've lost
absolutely
so much interest that we're really, you know, we're sort of teetering on will it be or won't it be, and that's a shame. And, you know, I have an interest certainly personally because I breed and sell horses, so I need customers. And but deeper than that, you know, everything I have is based upon this industry. I love it. I think it's special and unique as far as people and just you know, just to watch the most majestic animal that's, you know, that's ever been born. And I think we have to do a better job. I think we need, you know, we need current thinking. I think we need a shake up in, you know, some of the successions of power that remain generationally in the hands of a few. And I don't think you should be in charge of anything by birthright. You should be in charge of something based upon merit and performance. And I would say that a fair review of lots of the different agencies and stakeholder sort of appointees in our business, in peer review, we can do better. And it's a long subject.
So. No, John, that's as succinct a summary, and it's why I asked. You're widely known as one of the most thoughtful people in the game, and let's be honest, a meritocracy would equate to a revolution in this business.
Yeah, you know, and the other thing too is that, you know, anytime we talk about enacting change, everybody wants consensus. And I can tell you that there's no issue in sport, in life, or in your own home with your wife that has consensus. So you have to make bold decisions that are for the best of the industry, and they may not always reflect your personal point of view or your political agenda or those of your friends and influencers. But if you're bold and if you're properly motivated, where the business comes first, then you can make those hard decisions about change. But you also have to be seen amongst your constituents and participants in the business to make those decisions fairly, impartially, and not drive a personal point of view or a point of view that is you and a small group of friends to affect the entire industry. If it's not great for the entire industry, a judge has to separate his political point of view, his personal point of view on carrying guns or abortion or free speech. Any of those personal views have to be put aside when you adjudicate an issue fairly. And, there's organizations in the business that I believe can do a much better job. They could be more open to participants or participation of those who would be affected by their decisions, I'm not going to take a swipe at any particular organization or to confront people, but I would say that there's a disconnect. There's certainly a firewall between several organizations, and each have a point of view that they present as it must be this way. The other group presents an idea that it must be that way, and the only continuum that doesn't change is that nothing gets done because you have opposed positions that won't compromise, and more importantly than that, won't make a decision for the good of the industry because it has to be their way. And that's a troubling point of view. It's never a good scenario, but in times of crisis, in times of dwindling handle, dwindling fan attendance, it makes it even more imperative that there's a collective that makes these decisions and tries things that, one thing for sure, if something isn't working, you have to try something different. So when it's not working, and if your only defense is, well, we can't agree on what we should do next, that's, for me, not a defensible position because something has to be done. And if you make a decision and the business orients in a different direction because of some policy changes, if that doesn't work, then you make one another direction. The answer is out there, but inaction doesn't create the change that's needed. So I think there's a lot of, good conversations from crisis, because you become self-reflective and you start to look at, well, maybe in my point of view, some of the things that I think and feel and I said I would never do, maybe it's time for me to think about that and be a little more open-minded. But you can't then also react out of fear where, I think there was not trying to critique because it's not my business and I wasn't there, but, the reaction to sending the crisis to getting an affirmation that what we're doing is right from PETA, it seems oil and water, and that a group that is determined to end racing will be a co-sponsor of a press release or certainly applauding what you're doing. It's only a first step of the next step, which will be continue to tighten and tighten and tighten. And when you ask for acknowledgement from these, from a radical group for what you're doing and they give you a thumbs up, then you think you've appeased them and they're set, and they look at you as, we finally have the control of you that we want, and we'll do this a step at a time. So I think it's a dangerous possibility, and a subject you could talk about for a long time, but perception of racing and protesting and how animals are handled and, you know, medication issues and all these things have been now said often enough that it really doesn't matter how much truth there is in the actual merit of the conversation. The fact is that people, in a cursory glance, have an opinion about politicians, about all issues. Mm-hmm. And the opinion of our business of these issues right now has too much negative. And I think we need to educate the public, and I think that we need a grassroots, well-funded media campaign that reaches into people's homes and on their television sets and through all the media platforms. And it's not something that should be done by existing groups. It needs to be done with people that do this for a living, and they, you know, they have crisis management, and they know how to promote industry. And media is a complicated, specialized, professional business. And anytime you look at something and you superficially think that you can handle it, you probably can't. You know.
Well, John, that's a great point. That's a really well made point. The argument could be made that we're not even handling our own existing business well. So how are we going to handle something as complex as an outreach campaign?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it publicly, but I can guarantee that I can write four things about the horse business that are the people's perception. And you'd go around and take a survey of 100 random people, ask them, and I'm certain that four of the five things that I believe people's perception are will be validated. And I think the business represents this. I think they do that. And you can't allow people to be misinformed and form perceptions of your business and then try to react to it. You know, it's a lot easier in dollars spent and in time and success rate to present yourself rather than not to present yourself and then react to a negative stereotype to first undo what they think about your business and then to create a positive opinion. You know, one takes 10 years, the other takes 6 months. So, you know, If the public thinks about medication, if they think about horse retirement, those type of issues, one way, which it's all negative, why would we wait to then try to undo that negative, then try to form a positive? Why not come forward and say, here's how we feel at these issues, here's what we've done, here's what we're doing, here's how we've tackled them. But, you know, the only difference is the date. Gone to Washington, I don't know how many years, to say from within the business, we're not a good business. If I were a representative from wherever, Arizona, and I was sitting there, and I looked around and I saw 10 members of the horse business who are presented as representation of an industry, saying what a bad industry it is, and who could blame me if I thought it was a bad industry? It's puzzling to me when I played hockey and I didn't play long enough, but we had one rule, and the rules I carried forward into my business. That everything that's said in the dressing room stays in the dressing room. And there's some pretty intense moments in the dressing room, including fist fights and things said that should dissolve friendships forever. And when you walk out, everyone's got a smile on their face.
Yeah.
And I don't believe that to have public discourse negative about our business from powerful people within the business should be the former manner of discussion.
Absolutely.
I think you should be able to say anything you want, but it should be behind closed doors. It should be amongst people with the will and courage to make changes, not necessarily ones that they have to be beholden to anybody before they make them. And meaningful change should happen. It should happen in that way, with constituents willing to compromise, and not in public, and not slyly, and not negatively, covertly trying to get your point of view into a newspaper or onto a magazine. That hurts our business. And, you know, the business is bigger than any one group or one person. And anyone that thinks that they're more important than the business, I don't believe they have the respect of the business that they should. And no one should be allowed to discredit or harm our business for personal gain or personal viewpoint. I think that's wrong. I don't agree with it. It doesn't mean you can't feel strongly about things. It doesn't mean that you can't work to enact change. But you have to do it above board. You have to do it in a full, fair fight. Because if you ask, I think everyone's intentions are equal. The method and opinions on these issues can be varied. But as long as the ultimate goal is the advancement of the business, the love of the business, the growth of the business, there are solutions to all issues.
Absolutely.
But if getting your own way or
imposing your will.
Imposing your will is your complete and only priority. And if those other things happen, that's fine. But the only thing that really counts is my hold on power. Not only are you not going to achieve it, but you're never going to get the support of people who mistrust you.
Yeah.
And you'll need their support to enact those changes.
Well, so absolutely.
It's a dialogue that has to happen. And, you know, you make it very comfortable to talk on the radio. So I'm almost tempted to say some things I really feel, but I'm not going to because I know you have four listeners. So
No.
Who am I saying? So I'm speaking like I can't form a thought.
John.
Very superficial, but elusive and allude to a few things without saying too much because I'm not trying to take shots at anybody and I'm certainly not arrogant enough to think that I have all the answers or that I'm some guy that's smarter than other people. I don't think that and I hope I'm not coming across
not that at way. All.
I'm coming across to say the only thing that I know is I have legitimate concern, and I have legitimate concern not only where we are, but where we're going. And right now, we're a ship that's being carried with the tide, and we have no sail or navigation device that's going to take us where we want to go, whether we're going to land where the wind takes us. And that's not the approach that any industry should have, can have, in order to survive. And if anyone wonders about what the consequence can be, if that's where your business is, you just have to look at the Sears catalog.
Mm.
So many things that used to be commonplace in industry, and they're no more. So no one should think that your business is immune and will always continue. You have to be vigilant in protecting it, promoting it, and making it current and relevant. And, you know, the racing of thoroughbred horses is really not important to too many people. Therefore, you have a vulnerability when it comes to what are we going to do with these alternative revenue claims? Well, we're going to we're going to take them and improve our school system.
Yep.
What are we going to do to these protesters? Well, we're not going to have these horses be euthanized because of either on the unsafe safety of the racetrack, which is a first reaction, but then think if that goes further and it becomes because of the unsafety of the sport, and you've got a real problem. So, yeah. You know, that for me is what we is it, the fear is not the incident.
Yes.
The fear is drawing a wider conclusion.
Yeah.
And if you look at, there's many trends today of social issues that 10 years ago would have been considered impossible to have legs to be national stories.
Yeah.
Now, if you are in media or in business and you make a comment on a couple of subjects, you'll lose your job. Would have never happened before. So society can rise in sensitivity such that you can be a push-button issue. And you know, we've seen in celebrity, we've seen people are going to jail now, and people losing their jobs for saying and doing things that, as I said, not long ago, might be considered an ill taste, but certainly couldn't rise to the fact that you're going to lose your position or you're going to be no longer a chairman of the company. Or, come on, it was a joke. It's not a joke anymore.
No.
So,
nope.
You know, if enough people attended races or saw a video of a horse in a catastrophic injury, if that was on 60 Minutes, and a vote came to change the distribution of the BLT revenues in whatever state, Pennsylvania, the next week, what do you think would happen?
Yeah.
Would they vote to keep 50% of the allocation, or would they vote to continue it as it is? I believe they'd vote to change.
No.
And I'll give you a perfect example that Woodbine Racetrack lost their business with the stroke of a pen. The government came in and they said, your VLT revenues, which you spent all the money building the facility, putting in the machines, housing the staff, etc., we're coming in today and we're nationalizing those machines, those revenues, and we're going to pay you rent. And you're out of business. Then there was reaction and pushback. Now they call it a, quote, subsidy for the government to give money to the, you know, to the business to have horses not at post, well, takeover levels, but, you know, significant enough, and they're doing the best they can to rebound, but it shows a vulnerability. And, you know, when those funds were seen as going to pre-K education and child services versus the rich horse owners and,
you know, right,
over-salaried employees and any of the negatives that were either real or sounded good.
Right.
It was a total win for the other side. So, you know, that's why I think these other issues are so important, not only because they're important specific issues, but more broadly, they're important because they affect the perception of the business. And the perception of the business then dictates what takeout can be with respect to what states control, who gets VLT revenues, can you have VLT, can casinos operate less days racing,
right,
so they could operate more days with their casino.
Yeah, can
they be decoupling?
Decoupled.
We just have casinos. We don't have racing. And, you know, the best named horse that I've seen is Uncle Mo, because it's so true in life that when you're going good and when things are planing upward, everybody's on your side. And in politics and in life and in human nature, when things are going the other way, everybody jumps ship.
Yep.
They either attack or they abandon.
Yep.
We don't want to have a business that's being attacked and is abandoned. So no one has more stake than we do.
No, absolutely.
We're taking this in our own hands.
Wow.
But I've seen very little change. I've seen nothing that would indicate that without some internally hostile event that willingly things are going to happen. And the only thing different is the year. Because I've heard these same conversations for probably going on a decade now. And there's definitely time for some. It's a must that we change a lot of things. And I always will remain positive and in love with the business. And, you know, it's kind of like an evangelism. You want to share it with others. And that's what we need to do. And I think we have to open up to some outsiders as well, you know.
Agreed. On all fronts, John. I mean, this...
David Stern can't dunk a basketball. Runs a pretty good league. Gary Bettman can't put skates on. Runs a pretty good league.
Yeah.
So, you know,
the
NFL, every owner is a billionaire that gets whatever they want. But in the case of the NFL, they'll decide if you're selling Coke or Pepsi. You won't decide. And these revenues will be divided amongst teams. The success of one should be the success of all. And only one team can win the Super Bowl, but everybody's going to make money. So they're
examples.
To have a collective that understands that the game comes first. And look how they tackled issues like, could there be anything more emotional than your point of view of kneeling in the anthem?
Mm-hmm.
One group says, you know, we feel that there's racism, there's social injustice, and I'm going to take a stand. And another says, you know, I lost my brother serving this country. You couldn't have more divisive, polarizing opposite points of view. And they could run from that issue, or they could delve into it. And that's an issue I don't know how you'd sort that out. But they're sure, you know, was the final solution.
It subsided.
The Kaepernick lawsuit, it was settled. He has Nike ads, so there's still people on both sides, but I don't hear the NFL as being the bad guy today. Where 2 years ago, you know, they talked about boycotting games, and so you've got to diffuse these situations the best you can. And, you know, we have smoldering embers of discontent, and, you know, when that erupts into a wildfire like
we have
happens in California, and if the same thing happens in another state, all of a sudden maybe we have a national stage issue about what is this horse race? I remember dog racing used to be like that, and we put an end to that. So I'm not gloom and doom, but I would say that you should have some degree of paranoia. You should have a large degree of concern, because nobody's going to care about you or help you if you don't care about help yourself. And
well said.
We have to selfishly do that.
No.
Anyway, I've spoken too long.
John, you didn't speak too long at all. No, you were brilliant, and I've already received a half a dozen messages, and it's a sobering but so necessary, and you know
that's why I don't like to come on, because like to talk about these things, so I'm being a hypocrite to what I said earlier. nobody wants to do anything. So,
well,
you know, there's a lot of bright people, but I think a lot of people, rightly so, feel very disenfranchised. You know,
yeah.
There's some things I really don't like that you would have no access to even having a discussion. I said, not that.
Understood. Understood.
I have all the answers, but.
Well, you know, for years when we had the pleasure and honor of having Satish, who is one of your close friends, Satish railed on these topics, and very little has really changed since those years. But the one message, John, as we close, and I brought this up weeks ago, is stewardship. I mean, everyone that has any role in the game, from horse players to breeders, the consigners, the track operators, everybody, ADW companies, virtually everybody that has a hand, they might not have the same business, they might not have the same angle or experience, but everyone is supposed to approach this game with a stewardship in mind, and that, as you referenced, and I think that was the one thing I want to really drive home, is that there's been some people that have not been good stewards and have been out for themselves and have basically tripped this situation, and the way out of it is for everybody to, as you suggest, to tend your own garden and you know, with the common thread being, you know, the good of the game, and that should make your courses of action easy.
Absolutely, and if those are the driving forces, it will happen. But if you convert the horse business and institutions and points of view into politics, where if you're a Republican, no matter what the other side says, it's wrong.
Yeah.
And if you're a Democrat, whatever, Trump is exonerated. Not, well, he's not exonerated, but there wasn't enough evidence to prove that he colluded. But, like, there's no win.
Yeah.
And absolutely no race day medication. It's a sin. It's terrible. He can't do it. Okay, we'll move on to race day education, but must have this. No, we have to have this or that. I mean, it's very frustrating. That's why I believe it takes a third party that looks at both sides and says, here's what it is. Nationwide, this is our policy. And absolutely, it's indefensible to think that you have different rules in different states in the same sporting event. I think I've said this once before, that like in CFL, there's three downs. In NFL, it's four downs.
Yeah.
Each league is different. But you couldn't have a CFL team play, okay, now these are the rules. Now when you go here, these are the rules. It's different. Like, makes no sense.
Yeah.
Like, how do you, Oakland Raiders play, it's 15 downs for yards for first down. Well, you play in Seattle, it's 8. I mean, you have to have one set of rules. How do you not have one set of rules? Same sport. I almost got to first base. You're safe. It's in New York. No, in New York, you could just get close enough. You have to have a set of rules.
Yeah.
You must have a set of rules.
That'd be,
how do you have a legitimate sport? You can't move the finish line. You have to have a uniform set of rules.
Yeah.
And, again, going to other leagues, you know, they have spring meetings. And in the NHL, they discuss issues. Icing used to be home. Traditional part of the game, icing.
Yeah,
they have to go get the puck, you know. And if it's a battle, or someone could get hurt, but it's part of the game. You turn the puck over in their end because you're first on the puck. Now, touch up icing, and you get the hash mark. If you're clearly in front, they blow the whistle.
Yep.
No one would have thought that. You'd hit somebody hard enough, and maybe get knocked out. It was a good check.
Not anymore.
Now it's head contact, and you get suspended.
That's right.
So. Those games have changed.
Yeah.
Our game, in its the essence of the sport, remains the same, but there's lots of things that should keep up with the times.
Yeah.
Because the sensitivity of the public, what's considered acceptable to the public today, versus then is different. You say an inappropriate word in your office about the appearance, positive or negative, about an employee, you're reprimanded, or you have a high likelihood to lose your job. Could have never happened. Used to be, if a horse would break down, terrible event, you'd say, gee, that's terrible. You know, it's one of the risks of the game. Doesn't happen that often, but, right, who do we like in the next race? Maybe a bit callous. I'm not trying to say that that is right, but that would be the majority opinion. Now, a lady sees that. She starts crying. Her and her two daughters go home. They never come back, and they tell all their friends what a terrible thing they saw. So somewhere in between those two points of view has to represent our reaction to that event. Not their reaction, our reaction, which helps dictate their reaction. And if I read in the paper that we're doing this, we're closing, we're opening, we're whipping, we're not whipping, we're whipping sometimes, I'm thinking that these people, first, have they identified what the problem is? Second, are they doing something meaningful to fix it? And if so, why isn't the entire industry adopting the same? If those are issues, they exist every time there's a competition. So, again, going back to other sports, their rule on, I don't know much about football, but hitting below the knee, or it exists in every game no matter who you play. So our rules have to be our rules. And you need an independent arbiter to say, these are the rules, here's what we've come up with. And hopefully there'll be a set of rules that everybody's mad about. Because that's usually where a great deal lies. Where it's not enough for one and too much for the other.
That's right.
And everybody's mad. But right now, protecting your turf, not backing up, and getting what you want at any consequence, including to the detriment of our business, is an accepted point of view. And for me, it's not acceptable. I mean, you know, I'm not going to say anything specific, but
the message is clear.
To stay with what I said, or behind closed doors, I would be very specific about some of the things that I really feel that I think are unfair, and that are, you know, things happen that the public are not aware of. You know, there's tens of millions of dollars of our money in various organizations that I don't believe belong to the organizations, that are not dispersed as they should be. And I think there's completely invalid explanations over the fiefdom of those resources. And there's many issues that again, the people are, I don't know, you must be seen as independent, and you can't be self-appointed or self-perpetuated, or appointed on a grouping of like-minded people that eventuate your appointment. I know that doesn't make sense.
It's everyone. Any stakeholder listening, including the ones that should.
If I get eight people to like me and know me, vote for me, then I'm in. And then my eight people vote for you. Next thing you know, we control the organization, and we say or do nothing that we don't all agree with. So, well, what about the business? Well, we just want to stay, keep all this organized. You know, I'm not involved in the politics of the business, or I was to a small degree. I was on the Breeders' Cup Large Board for a term or two, and since then I've remained completely independent. And you know, that might seem selfish because I'm complaining about things, but I'm not empowered to or ran for, try to get involved in various organizations to make change. But maybe that means I don't believe many or any of the organizations are in a position to, or are willing to make the changes with an open mind that I think has to be strongly considered. So if you're part of something that you don't believe can impact or enact change, then are you there for the right or the wrong reason?
Mm.
So I prefer to be independent.
Understood. Understood. And but the message will be well received, John. And I can't thank you enough. A tremendous, just a. That's why I asked, because I know that you know you these are serious topics, and that you know, they weigh on you as a major stakeholder in the game. And I'm delighted that you could share it with us, because it'll be well received.
I think everybody feels the same, man.
Yeah.
Talk to a leading breeder, a leading jockey, a leading trainer, a leading yearling buyer. And, you know, nothing I've said is shocking, or I'm not pointing fingers at a specific person group. I'm saying this. We need to do better. We need to change our direction. I don't know who could disagree with that. Now, how we get there, that's the argument. But, you know, the solution is there.
It's out there somewhere. That's, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's a willingness to make change, agree to change if it's not everything that you want. That's the question. If that willingness is there, a round table of people, an appointment of a, like, I hear the word commissioner bantied around often. I don't know if that's the right word, but the president of our business. It's a doable deal. But you can't want a president of the business or commissioner of the business. Hey, we need one. Here's the guy. You can say, we need one.
Well,
you can't necessarily then say, I've got the guy. Hmm. This might not be your guy.
That's that, and there lies the rub, and it's been that way for,
if it's not my guy,
200 years. Yeah.
Do it. Well, that's why it hasn't been done.
Well,
if it's not him, what about he's already president of an existing organization?
Yeah.
So all you're doing is giving him more power under a different name. We're trying to change that dynamic. Oh, well, how about his assistant? You're not understanding me. It has to be fresh. It has to be impartial. It has to be without alignment to one side or the other. How about so-and-so? Yeah, he's 23 years old. He's never had a job. Well, that's the way we've always done it.
That's,
I know,
right.
That's why we're doing something different. So, anyway.
John, I appreciate this immensely, and yesterday I really came away really kind of came into it a little downcast, and left yesterday exhilarated, not just from the, you know, the ambient performance in the sale, but in talking to people and people upbeat, and we'll take that lead, and we'll get some Uncle Mo going.
Great, thank you.
John Sikora, as important a voice as there is in the game, and someone who a lot of people look to, and you can see why, for that kind of guidance and frank talk. I appreciate John. I once I get him going, it's like with Satish. Satish would say, "You wind me up, you get me going."